This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Southern West Virginia is still reeling from last month's devastating floods. Now some help is coming from an unexpected place.
I mean, you can drive through McDowell, Mingo counties, and you'll see just everyone's belongings on the side of the road, waiting to be picked up by trash company or the National Guard. And it's like everything in the house, you know, it's tragic.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Hope Gas, committed to the growth and development of West Virginia to strengthen the community. Information at wvisforhope.com. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics released preliminary data on state employment levels Monday. Jack Walker reports.
Between January 2024 and January 2025, West Virginia lost roughly 3,800 non-farm positions on company payrolls, according to the Bureau's latest data. That was a decline of roughly 0.5% in the state's overall payroll workforce. Plus, West Virginia was one of just four states to see a notable one-month decrease in payroll jobs from December 2024 to January 2025. That one-month decrease came in around 0.6%. West Virginia was joined by Georgia, Missouri, and Indiana in experiencing a decrease in payroll jobs over the month. Meanwhile, the remainder of the United States held steady. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Charleston.
Monday was Environment Day at the Capitol. As part of our daily broadcast, the legislature today, energy and environmental reporter Curtis Tate sat down in the Capitol Rotunda with Emmett Pepper of Energy Efficient West Virginia and Lucia Valentine of the West Virginia Environmental Council about legislation they're following this year. Here's a portion of that interview.
Happy Environmental Day at the Capitol.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Emmett, let's start with you. We had been discussing Senate Bill 505. Can you tell me a little bit more about that bill and what happened with it last week in committee?
Yeah, well, the committee approved it, and I guess cut off discussion about it before doing so. And then I guess there was a celebration afterwards with red hats and hard hats and all kinds of stuff.
But what's celebrating?
What's that? Oh, the Coal Association. What the bill does is, I think it's called the Reliability and Reliable and Affordable Electricity Act. Unfortunately, it does neither. It does nothing to address our reliability issues, which are significant and some of the worst in the country here in West Virginia. And it actually would do the opposite. It would make electric bills less affordable.
Well, and in fact, that's what Appalachian Power told me when I asked them about it. But who else raised a concern about it? Somebody you and I both know.
Yeah, I saw that the Chairman Lane of the Public Service Commission, she was on and talked about her perspectives on it, and didn't seem to think it was necessary.
Well, and she said that if anything, it would just increase an administrative burden on commission staff, and otherwise wouldn't give them any power to do anything that they can't already do.
Yeah, and my concern is, what it does is it requires power plants that can operate at will, essentially, during peak demand times. It requires them to basically never retire. So if there was some determination that, gosh, this power plant is really expensive, not best for ratepayers, it would save ratepayers money, help people lower their bills to have it close, this law would say that it can't close. And so that's my concern, is this is going to be, you know, one more way that we as ratepayers, regular West Virginians paying their electric bills, are subsidizing a very few industries in the state, and our bills just keep going up.
Well, and it also would seem to disadvantage renewables, wind and solar, and many companies coming to West Virginia actually want to have that option, don't they?
That's right, yeah. I mean, it would basically make it very difficult for wind and solar to be part of the mix as well.
Yeah, that's another thing that Appalachian Power raised with me. In addition to potential rate impacts, they also said that, this could hurt business opportunities in the state. Lucia, there's another bill that we're interested in having to do with above ground storage tanks. Now there was the spill into the Elk River in 2014, and it seems like every year since then they've been trying to maybe walk back what they did at that point. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. So Senate Bill 592, the Above Ground Storage Tank Act, passed the Senate last week and is now in the House. And this bill, like you said, initially passed as a result of the 2014 chemical spill. And since then, there's been many attempts to roll back regulations. And now the only tanks left that are regulated are tanks in ZCCs, or Zones of Critical Concern, which means that these are now coal, oil and gas, and now coal tanks, thanks to the committee substitute, that are located closest to our drinking water sources. So these tanks are located, travel time about 5 hours upstream. So if we were to have another spill, they could quickly contaminate our drinking water source again.
I think I heard the chairman of the Senate Energy Industry and Mining Committee said something to the effect that coal and gas didn't cause that spill in 2014. They weren't involved, so, you know, let's give them a break or something like that. What's your response to that?
I think that, you know, this doesn't place any new burdens on the oil and gas and coal industry. These are regulations that we see in place that have been working. We know that 38% of all confirmed leaks reported to the DEP do come from these tanks in the zones of critical concern. So it does show that these tanks are leaking. And we need the inspection process in place that has been working to detect those leaks and make sure that they're cleaned up in time so that we can prevent another spill from happening.
That was a discussion between Lucia Valentine of the West Virginia Environmental Council and Emmett Pepper of Energy Efficient West Virginia and energy and environmental reporter Curtis Tate. Visit our website to hear the rest of that interview and make sure to tune in to our daily broadcast of the legislature today at 6 p.m. on TV and radio, and then again on the West Virginia channel at 7 p.m. It's also streaming on our website and YouTube channel. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Sunny skies today, high temperatures in the 60s and low 70s. Clear overnight with lows in the 40s. Tomorrow, sunny and breezy with highs in the 60s, 70s, and low 80s. Support for WVPB is provided by Hope Gas, providing information on natural gas safety education, like how to spot a gas leak by sight, sound, and smell. Information at hopegas.com. It's been a month since floods ravaged West Virginia's southern coal fields, resulting in dozens of deaths across three states. As Chris Schultz reports, the long road to recovery is just beginning.
On a recent Wednesday night, like on many nights, there was a lively crowd at the Morgantown Music Venue, 123 Pleasant Street. While tunes played on the main stage, vendors and artists at the co-op next door hawked their wares. But on this night, proceeds were going to relief efforts in West Virginia's southern coal fields after flooding in February.
I don't know if it's necessarily the right approach, but it's the approach that's accessible to me, accessible to my friends.
Tommy Thompson III is a Morgantown musician and one of the benefits organizers. He says he and his friends wanted to do what they could to provide some sense of relief to those impacted by the floods.
Building community is really important. I really think that relief efforts come from the bottom up. We've seen a lot of the damage go unnoticed on the national and state levels in government, and it's really on us to provide some relief, you know?
In West Virginia, three deaths have been attributed to the flooding. In neighboring Virginia, four died. And in East Kentucky, the death toll is close to 25 people. On February 17th, Governor Patrick Morrissey requested a major disaster declaration for 13 counties affected by the flooding, but federal response has been slow. A presidential declaration of a major disaster was approved February 26th, but only for McDowell, Mercer, Mingo, and Wyoming counties. Last week, two more counties in West Virginia were approved for financial assistance from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. In Kentucky, 10 counties have been approved. Virginia has yet to receive a federal declaration. Cody Cannon is a stand-up comedian based in Morgantown who helped organize the benefit show.
Historically, the Southern Coalfields are a community in Appalachia that are completely neglected. As someone who spent a large part of his youth in the Southern Coalfields, the community is strong because it's the community who takes care of each other. They have to rely on each other.
Cannon was in the region during the flooding and says in the best case, recovery will take months. He says the consensus seems to be the people will have to help themselves in that process, which is part of why he wanted to put on a benefit.
They're still digging mud out of their homes. Even though the flood was a few weeks ago, it's the kind of thing that it's going to take minimum 6 months before these people are back on their feet.
Zach Shrewsbury is a community organizer who has been coordinating community response to the floods with his group, Blue Jay Rising. He says the level of devastation cannot be overstated, with people staying in churches and even in their cars while they try to salvage their homes.
I mean, you can drive through McDowell, Mingo counties, and you'll see just everyone's belongings on the side of the road, waiting to be picked up by trash company or the National Guard. And it's like everything in the house, you know, it's tragic.
Following the flood, 165 personnel from the West Virginia National Guard were deployed to provide response and recovery assistance in Wyoming, Logan, Mercer, Mingo, McDowell, and Wayne counties. However, by early March, that number had dropped to just over 100 Guard personnel. Shrewsbury says as the weeks have passed, communication to population centers has improved, but many isolated enclaves remain underserved and even disconnected.
There's so many small areas like Annawalt, for instance. We are probably the only organization really keeping them supplied with everything they need the best we can because they're so hard to get to.
Brad Davis is the pastor of five churches in McDowell County, collectively known as the Welch Charge of the United Methodist Church. Like Shrewsbury, he says much of his outreach work since the flood has focused on the more isolated haulers, as well as elderly and disabled individuals.
The community has really rallied around each other, neighbors helping neighbors, strangers helping strangers. But in saying all that, you know, we need a lot more help. It's going to be a long road of recovery ahead, and we need a lot more resources in order to get back on track.
Davis says the vast majority of the relief he's seen come into the county has been from private and grassroots efforts like the benefit concert in Morgantown. He says he is heartened to see so much support, but the need is great. Davis says toxic mud and muck left by the floodwaters still has to be cleaned out of basements and ground floors of homes. He says that makes the region's issues that existed before the flood, like water quality, stand out now more than ever.
Prior to the flood, many of these communities were having issues with access to clean water. So now you have a situation where people in these communities, in these water impacted communities, are having to try to clean up their homes, their businesses, churches, using dirty water to do it.
The major disaster declaration from the federal government is a crucial step for recovery. But Davis points out that it only opens up avenues for personal loans and relief.
We are grateful for that, but we also need the public assistance component that goes along with that. We need the full gamut of resources that both the federal government and the state government can bring to bear here in order for us to be able to recover.
Back in Morgantown after the concert, Cannon estimates they raised more than $4,000 for recovery efforts, along with several carloads of donated cleaning supplies, water, and food. But flood victims will need more resources and awareness on the long path to recovery. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University and Marshall University School of Journalism and Mass Communications. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Maria Young, and Randy Yowie. Maria Young produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.